Will developing countries be positively impacted by AI and the newest technology? Not always. What is needed is appropriate technology. What is appropriate technology? That's the topic today on Mind Matters.
Welcome to Mind Matters, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head-on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. This is Mind Matters, where we talk about artificial intelligence and natural intelligence. We know a lot about AI in developed countries like the United States and Western Europe. We know about the concerns of self-driving trucks replacing truck drivers. We know about robots maybe taking the employment away from factory workers. But what about AI and technology in developing countries? What is the best way to introduce technology into developing countries? These countries that are developing don't need faster computers. They need technology which is appropriate for them, so-called appropriate technology. And today we have as a guest Brian Thomas, who is a practitioner of appropriate technology. Professor Thomas is a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor. He is the faculty in residence at Thiel Residential College, where undergraduate engineering and computer science students eat, live, and learn together. Professor Thomas is also the founder and current faculty advisor of an incredible award-winning student organization named Engineers with a Mission. Brian, let me start right out. How can technology be appropriate or inappropriate, especially for a developing country?
Technology is appropriate or inappropriate to the extent that it can be used in the culture in which it's intended to be used. And by used, it doesn't just mean operate. I don't just mean operate. I also mean repair, maintain, afford. Is it economically appropriate? Is it culturally appropriate? Does it offend people? Is it appropriate to the religious and cultural norms in which it's embedded? And some of those cultural norms are not so subtle, like the tendency of a culture to perform maintenance and perform repairs. Or do they just let things go until they break?
I have heard, and I can't cite the source, about engineers and scientists that went into a third world country and were excited to increase the number of harvests that they had in a year from, for example, two harvests to three harvests.
Okay.
And they thought this would be great because now the natives had 50% more food to eat, and they thought everybody would be happy, but the natives were really, really upset. And the reason they were upset was because it interfered with their tradition of festivals. They had harvest festivals yearly. So I think this kind of talks about your comments about the cultural matching, if you will, with the technology.
Yes, I heard a story, and I like to tell this story in class about and I believe it was in Sudan, a nonprofit organization saw these women bending over to wash their clothes in the river, and they thought, wouldn't it be nice if they had some kind of washing stand where they could stand upright and wash their clothes. So they built some kind of concrete structure with some kind of piped water where the women could stand around and wash their clothes without having to bend over. And it was a big success. Everybody loved it. And so they decided, well, let's replicate it in other parts of the country. And they went to some other parts of the country to do the same thing, and they weren't used. Or what would happen is one woman would come up and wash her clothes, and then when she was finished, the next one would. But it was designed to be a multi-person facility. Why was this?
Oh, so they kind of had a kiosk there in
yes.
a way.
Yes, yeah, like, right,
where everybody washed
their
clothes.
Maybe three or four people could stand around. And they did some research, and they finally found out the reason. In the first area where this laundry kiosk, if you will, was successful, was a Christian area. And the women had no problem getting together and in fact, they enjoyed the social interaction of talking while they were working. But in the other area, the second area was a Muslim area. And there were cultural inhibitions about washing your clothes in front of other people, especially perhaps your underwear or underwear.
I would have
family.
A problem with that. Yes.
Okay. And so, so that's why only one woman would use it at a time. So what they did was they built smaller laundry stands and spaced them around, 10 or 15 feet apart, so they could still have conversation and still do laundry together, but there was a measure of privacy that way, and then it was accepted.
So the point is it just introduction of a technology into a developing country can't be done in isolation. It has to be taken into consideration of the cultural and religious and
we
ceremonial background.
Assume that because it works in our culture, it will work in another culture.
Right.
In fact, that's a guarantee for failure.
Okay.
There's lots of grain grinding mills around sub-Saharan Africa that are no longer used because they're broken down from lack of maintenance and lack of repair. Maybe in the United States they would be repaired and would be maintained so that we can continue to use them as a labor-saving device. Well, the money for that was not available. The culture of repair is going to be linked to your assumption that you have dominion over nature.
Oh, really? So it's kind of a religious or a cultural thing.
Yes, and I've heard one person describe it, if you imagine an axis of fatalism, that the more fatalistic a culture, the less likely they are to make repairs. For example, animism, where we might say, and I'm not going to be an expert in animism, but if you imagine that the world is controlled by chaotic spirits at war with one another, why are you going to spend money repairing your machine? Because the only reason it breaks is because some spirits beyond your control made it break. If, however, you believe that we have dominion over nature, then you're going to make repairs to that system because you know that those repairs will not be a waste of time. And so what we find is the Judeo-Christian worldview makes repairs and maintenance of technological systems more effectively.
Okay. I know in talking to you before we started talking, or I learned before we started talking, that there's actually, number one, different flavors of so-called appropriate technology, and number two, it has quite a history in terms of what's happening. Could you speak to that a little bit?
I can. I'll have to say I'm not an expert on it, but from my understanding in the late 70s, there was a movement called the Appropriate Technology Movement. And
really?
The idea was that if people in poor countries can be shown how to build simple technologies, low technologies instead of high technologies, things that they could build and manufacture and recreate at the village level with limited tools and know-how, that those, if we could develop such technologies that would be helpful to their lifestyle, generate income, perhaps even labor-saving devices, that those would be naturally propagate from village to village. So if you can learn how
So this would be, for example, maybe a place where there were lots of coconuts. If they could figure out how to build their houses out of coconut hulls,
exactly,
then that could be something which could propagate to the rest of the country if they figured out a good way to do
that. If someone, even a third party NGO or a university could develop
NGO is
a non-government organization, a nonprofit organization in the United States. We call it a nonprofit here. Some do-gooder organization, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, develops the idea, maybe teaches the first people how to do it, and then it catches on and gets perfected and it's a money-making device, and it generates income for this village, which naturally causes the folks in the next village to want to do the same, and it propagates that way. That was the original idea.
How successful was it?
Not very successful. Martin Fisher of Kickstarter is a man. He's got a...
That was an NGO? Kickstarter?
Kickstarter is the name of his NGO, yes.
Okay.
And he's got his degree from Stanford, PhD in mechanical engineering, and began looking at this problem in the late 80s. And one of the conclusions he reached was that manufacturing is not going to be done at the village level. The manufacturing needs to be done in city centers or urban areas in the proximity of these local villages. And then we worry about building supply chains to distribute the technologies. That's a more effective solution. So that's not necessarily, I guess you could say that that's a different type of appropriate technology, or it's a change in the thinking of appropriate technology. So you could, let's summarize that. One idea of appropriate technology is some kind of device or devices or processes that can be repeated and replicated at the village level, and that will propagate naturally from village to village. Another idea is to develop a part that can be, or a device rather, like say a pump or an irrigation device that can be manufactured at in urban areas, like perhaps in machine shops. Maybe you need a welder, maybe you need a machinist to help put the thing together. And then to develop supply chains that distribute those items, typically for sale, to improve people's lives.
Well, one of the things, another flavor, I think, would be something called, I've heard it called sustainable technology, wherein one goes in and helps economically to develop a natural resource where the natives, the nationals, can actually take over and actually run a thriving business. I'm familiar, for example, with this being attempted for coconuts. And coconuts grow in a lot of the undeveloped countries, especially around the equator. And that's a natural resource that can be exploited not only for the coconut as a food and as an oil, but also the husks of coconuts. If you've ever tried to crack one, they're pretty rough.
They are. They're very tough.
They're very, very tough. So that says, man, there's something there in that coconut hull that I should be able to use. So I think there was an attempt there for that. The idea is that it is sustainable in the sense that you go in, the business starts, and hopefully it assists human flourishing.
Yes, and that's such. Right. You've got to... anybody that goes in with an unsustainable model these days is not taken seriously. You've got to have it economically stable or economically sustainable, meaning it's going to generate enough income on its own to sustain itself.
Okay.
It cannot rely on an endless supply of donations.
Okay.
I can give you another example of this. This may be the best example I've got yet.
Okay. You're getting better and better.
Yeah, I'm warming up. Okay. There's a fellow that I met, an American, and he was working in Honduras, and he bought 500 acres in rural Honduras with the feeling of God calling him to build an orphanage. So he realized that orphanages often run on donations, and he could harness his network in the United States and his own personal wealth, and he could put in donations to build and to maintain this orphanage. But what he studied them, and he found that if you build an orphanage to, say, house 100 kids, that the donations will dry up after a while. Mm-hmm. They start with a surge, but then they diminish. And then once they diminish, then the orphanage can no longer maintain 100 children. Maybe it can only maintain 30 children. And so now we have this oversized building and an underutilized resource because it's running on donations. So he wanted to do things differently. And on this large purchase of land, he built palm trees and he built tanks, large tanks for growing tilapia, the fish, which is a popular food source and export in Honduras.
I think I get that at the coffee shop where I go for lunch on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
They have them there, right? They're kind of a white fish. You don't know. Okay. I think my wife said that those are raised externally. Raised externally. They're raised outside of the U.S. and imported.
Yeah, they are imported. The United States imports a lot. We import, I think, a lot of ours from China, at least when I've read the packages at H-E-B.
Okay. H-E-B, if you're not from Texas, is like Kroger or Walmart. It's kind of a high-class Walmart, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Emphasis more on groceries and less on apparel and auto parts. Well, let's see, where were we? So this fellow, he built an orphanage in Honduras, and instead of doing it with donations, what he did was he used a surge of donations at the beginning to build a sustainable business, and that was building tilapia tanks and systems of growing large, you know, piping in fresh water and aerating the tanks and all this. Is a very big production, and then he sells for profit the tilapia and also the palm oil that he grows on the facility, and uses those profits to run the orphanage instead of using the donations to run the orphanage. And that way he's got a more sustainable model.
I've heard about that. It's a self-contained unit wherein you grow plants and you have worms, and the My wife calls it worm tea, which is kind of the liquid that worms make.
Worm in your tea. No, we and don't have worm fish tea. In your coffee.
Yeah, exactly. But the worm tea from the growing crops kind of goes into the water and supplies nourishment for the fish, and it's kind of a self-contained universe.
Yes, those are beautiful little systems. I think the system that we were working with this guy was he had if you're growing several thousand tilapia, then you make a lot of fish poop. And so what do you do with all that fish poop? And we were trying to help him do a biodigester to generate methane from the fish sewage.
That would be a really appropriate technology. Well, Professor Thomas, our time is up. I want to continue because there's some other things that I want to ask you maybe in another episode. One of them is actually the impact of AI, specifically cell phones, on some of the third world countries. We hear a lot about Malawi and the fact that they were an undeveloped country. The cell phone came in and it just propagated all over the place. The current CEO of Microsoft is all excited about dumping AI sort of technology into developing countries. And also, I want to hear about some of the things that you've done. I know that you've taken what seems to be things we take for granted, such as white light LEDs, to different places to help them in an appropriate technology sense, and maybe some of the other projects that you've done with Engineers with a Mission. So we'll talk about that next.
Okay.
Okay. So until next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.today. That's mindmatters.today. Mind Matters is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.